Ray Brown's Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Orleans, Cape Cod. BirdwatchersGeneralStore.com.
By Vortex Optics, with the VIP warranty. Their unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. Learn more at VortexOptics.com. And by Hog Island Audubon Camp. For full camp schedule, program details, and to register, visit hogisland.audubon.org.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on when you're listening. And if you're listening live, happy Easter. Welcome to our show number 1034. On last week's show, we talked a bit about the big periodical cicada emergence in more than a dozen states this spring. And it prompted our friend Dr. Jim Randolph to send a note saying the following: when you mentioned periodic cicadas, I cringed because I remember the still unexplained bird deaths that occurred a few years ago, and that some researchers theorized that the birds died because people sprayed cicadas with insecticides, some of which were probably neonicotinoids, even though the adult cicadas were going to lay eggs and croak, all on their own anyway. Probably worthwhile to remind people not to spray insecticides on cicadas. It's much worse than a waste of time. Thanks for that good advice, Dr. Jim. We have a listener audio postcard today from the land of 10,000 lakes up there in the North Star State.
This is Chris Holson, a Talking Birds ambassador, a proud flirter in West St. Paul, Minnesota, listening to my favorite little patch, Wake Up. The grackles are everywhere. The red-winged blackbirds are loud. The Canada geese are having a lovely territory fight over whose pond this is. Just saw a northern flicker, and there's a couple of high-billed grebes swimming in the pond. Happy spring, everybody.
Happy spring to you, Chris. She is definitely feeling it, and with those birds there, why not? Thanks for that audio postcard, Chris. We love to get audio postcards, and we know folks love hearing them. How to make one? Just grab a smartphone or digital recording device of some sort and just speak into it for 30 seconds, maybe a minute, describing what you're seeing or hearing or both, and then just email the file right here to ray@talkingbirds.com. That's ray@talkingbirds.com. And by the way, if you have a little glitch in there or you have to start over or whatnot, no problem. Just send it to us. We have an entire team of expert audio editors here to take care of that. Thanks again for being with us. And here is a little preview of... Sounds like my Uncle Ralph, but it's actually our mystery bird. So it's a preview of our mystery bird contest coming along a bit later on in the show. And here are some clues. Our mystery bird is a medium-sized dabbler associated with lakes and ponds. The male has a gray body and a pale gray head and dark bill, a white wing patch, and a black hind end. Females are brown overall and resemble female mallards. Our bird breeds mostly in the central plains of the U.S. and Canada, and winters mainly in the central and southern U.S. and down through Mexico. That's the bird and the sound and the clues, and wow, look at this beautiful prize. Well, two of them. From Brome Bird Care, we have a...
Mega 600 feeder.
That's right. That's a big one with extra-large tube that holds nearly 2.5 pounds of seed. Easy to clean, chew-proof, includes the Brome seed ventilation system to keep the seed cool and dry. Plus, a big bag of our favorite coffee, that's shade-grown, bird-friendly, delicious birds and beans coffee, grown under the natural forest canopy in Central America to preserve wintering habitat for all those warblers and tanagers and thrushes and hummingbirds now coming up north. Prizes there in our mystery bird contest, and we'll be doing the actual thing a little bit later, kind of getting you ready to go for that on the show here.
Thank you.
Well, early last week, the Postal Service was buzzing with lots of packets of income tax returns. Then later in the week, it was buzzing with lots of packets of Talkin' Birds show info cards heading for Texas, California, Connecticut, Ontario, Canada, and other destinations for new Talkin' Birds ambassadors. Those are listeners helping us do what we are trying to do, spread the word about the beauty of birds and the pressing need to preserve our planet. Now, if this ambassador thing is new to you, stay tuned for a brief explanation. Today, we're saluting Edward Trainer from Bristol, Rhode Island, home of that beautiful Audubon Society of Rhode Island Nature Center, Visitors Center, and Aquarium. And Edward says he is discovering new birds every day. Wow. Thank you, Edward, for becoming a Talkin' Birds ambassador. And here's another ambassador with some good thoughts about being one.
Hi, my name's Emily, and I live right outside of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia. What I really like about the show is the postcard segment. I enjoy hearing what other folks are listening to and seeing in the world of birds. Becoming a Talkin' Birds ambassador is rewarding because it's a concrete way to participate in a community that spreads information about nature and conservation. It gives me an official reason to nerd out about birds.
Thank you so much, Emily. Beautifully said. All that nature, conservation, and nerding out about birds. Thanks so much. And here's how to become a Talkin' Birds ambassador. It's pretty easy to do. Just go to talkinbirds.com. Leave out the G, talkinbirds.com. You'll see the Get Involved tab up at the top of the homepage. And if you just click on that, you'll come right to info on how to become a Talkin' Birds ambassador. And we like to emphasize, because it's true, it's really easy to sign up for and really easy to do. That's the Get Involved tab there at talkinbirds.com. Still to come today, Mike O'Connor will join us for Let's Ask Mike Live. And since the live version of our show is on Easter Sunday, Mike will talk about not Easter eggs, but egg shells. Coming up just ahead, we'll talk with environmental advocate Nick Kemble about a project aimed at making our beautiful national parks even more beautiful. But first, a salt marsh sparrow that isn't a salt marsh sparrow is this week's featured feathered friend.
This is the story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Well, not exactly. It's just the story of Goldilocks. The Goldilocks bird, that is. And that bird would be the seaside sparrow. This bird, like Goldilocks, requires things to be just right. That means a combination of just right environmental factors for successful breeding, including elevated vegetation for nesting and open areas where it can forage for insects. The seaside is a large, dark sparrow, larger and darker than a salt marsh sparrow, mostly grayish-brown with buff and brown streaking on the breast and belly. It has a whitish malar stripe, or mustache, a narrow yellow patch between its bill and eye, and a white throat. It has strong legs and feet for perching on swaying marsh reeds, and a long, heavy bill for digging out invertebrates and seeds in mud and dense grasses and shrubs. The seaside sparrow is found year-round along the U.S. East Coast from North Carolina to Florida, and along the entire Gulf Coast, with breeding territory extending up into southern Maine. The Partners in Flight Conservation Partnership includes the seaside sparrow on its yellow watch list for species with restricted ranges, a Florida Everglades subspecies, the Cape Sable seaside sparrow, is federally listed as endangered. Overall, the species is challenged by runoff of pesticides and other chemicals, by ditch cutting of marshes, and by climate change-affected sea levels, accelerating loss of tidal marsh habitats. Today's featured feathered friend, the Goldilocks bird.
Just right.
A Modromus
Maritimus, the Seaside Sparrow.
Welcome again to our show, number 1034. Nick Kemble is the program's associate for the Five Gyres Institute, a nonprofit that focuses on reducing plastics pollution by focusing on primary research with programs concentrating on science, education, and adventure involving research expeditions for citizen scientists. Having grown up near the New Jersey coastline, Nick has a lifelong love of the oceans and marine ecosystems and is an advocate for environmental protection and conservation. He joined Five Gyres after completing internships with the U.S. House of Representatives, the United Nations, and the Green Climate Fund, where he helped advance international sustainability initiatives and development. He joins us now to talk about a Five Gyres initiative known as the Plastic Free Parks 25, as in 2025, Trash Blitz. Good morning, Nick.
Hi, Ray. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Our pleasure indeed, and wonderful work you're doing. Before I ask about the Plastic Free Parks Trash Blitz, tell me a little bit about Five Gyres, including about the name, because that's a pretty significant name attached.
Sure. Yeah, so we were founded in 2009 by Marcus and Anna Erickson, trying to explore the plastic pollution crisis, particularly in the Pacific Ocean. So there's five Pacific gyres. You may have heard of these as the trash islands. This is just kind of collections with ocean currents of where plastic accumulates in the sea. So there's five Pacific gyres, hence our name. But Marcus and Anna started by doing these research expeditions out into the ocean. And then from there, over time, we've switched more on land, trying to do research in the lab and on the ground of trying to map out the plastic pollution crisis, both in marine and land ecosystems, and drive policy change around that and bring people together to actually bring forward some change on this issue.
Well, for those who just aren't really aware of the plastic pollution problem, give us, if you can, a very brief outline of just how big the problem is.
Yeah. So, for example, from Marcus and Anna's research and other scientists as part of Five Gyres, concluded there's over 170 trillion pieces of plastic floating in our oceans, and that's just in the oceans alone. That has to be coming from land, and we're now doing more research on the prevalence of microplastics, how it's getting into soil, into our food, into our bodies. So we all know that plastic is everywhere, but we're now really learning the finer details and the effects on both the health of our ecosystems and on our own bodies.
Yeah, by the way, when you talk about our own bodies, I mean, we're hearing more and more about health issues, right? Associated with microplastics and nanoplastics.
Definitely.
So the Trash Blitz, fourth annual, it started on the 1st of April, and I know it continues for several months. How does it work?
Yeah. So Trash Blitz is a community science project to bring people, like I mentioned, out to understand the prevalence of plastic in our communities, our national parks, our ecosystems, to document what they are finding. So whether this is if you're on a walk or a hike or doing a cleanup, you can just be accounting for each of the items by what it is, what it's made out of, and who makes it. Mm-hmm. We then take this, put it into reports to, again, map out the waste and plastic landscape, but also use that to shape tailored policy recommendations and action around this. So Plastic Free National Parks is our Trash Blitz, particularly focused on national parks and federal spaces. So kicked off April 1st of this year, and it goes through Halloween, so October 31st. And then we take this, produce a report, and use it to try to get more congressional support around the Reducing Waste in National Parks Act, which seeks to phase out single-use plastics from being sold in the parks. And of course, by doing that, we would see a drastic reduction of single-use and plastic products polluting our public spaces and our beloved public parks.
Where are we, by the way, in that the banning of selling plastic stuff in national parks?
Yeah, so there was a secretarial order under the Biden administration by Secretary of the Interior, Holland, that created a timeline by 2030 that the single-use plastic need to be phased out from being sold in the parks. A lot of that has been rolled back and continues to be rolled back. So the Reducing Waste National Park Act through Congress would codify that into law. So it's not the whim of any administration. We're just going to see a reduction in plastics. But given budget cuts and the situation at hand, we'll probably see a significant uptick in the amount of plastic polluting our parks and federal spaces in the next couple of years.
Let me just go back to that question about describing the material that's picked up, the data,
sure.
Items and brands and material, especially again at that brands part about, you know, where this plastic is coming from. What can you tell us about that part?
So we are one of the only groups out there doing data collection on the branded component. A lot of other groups are receive money from beverage companies and such. Mm-hmm. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, so we don't take any of this. But we really want to gather information on that to identify source points. So for example, as we discussed, both based in the Northeast, say you're in a park and there's a significant number of Dunkin' Donuts cups that you're finding near the park entrance, there's a Dunkin' Donuts up the street from the park entrance. You can maybe conclude, okay, maybe a lot of these products that are ending up in the park are coming from that location. So you can have conversations with them and also with like local municipal governments to try to shape change around this and prevent those products from being brought into the park as well. But it's also really important to find out what products, what brands are the most prevalent in these spaces, just so this can advise the park vendors, procurement trends, and also just identify which are the largest corporations that are polluting our parks.
So how do people get involved? And there are people listening in all different parts of the country. Can they, how do they join up and can they do stuff right in their local areas?
Yeah. So we have a couple of different ways to get involved. You can start out, if you're interested in our work and want to follow along, subscribe to our newsletter on fivegyres.org, G-Y-R-E-S. We also then, for TrashBlitz, we have the TrashBlitz app on the Google Play and Apple App Store. You can download the app. And then once you make an account, go into Plastic Free National Parks if you want to find a local park near you. Then this is on federal and national park spaces. Or we have TrashBlitz anywhere where you can do this anywhere in the world. It doesn't even have to be in the United States. And just log what you're finding in your community. And we also have our ambassador network. If you want to find a community of people that really care about plastic issues and are driving change in their communities, check it out on our website.
Is it there that I saw the guide, by the way? There's a beautiful pictorial guide about the kinds of plastics you might encounter.
Yeah, so we have reference materials. So if you're out there trash blitzing and you need to try to get more information about what types of plastic you're picking up and you're logging, we have guides and resources there available.
All right. That website, again, is fivegyres.org. That's the number five, and it's G-Y-R-E-S, fivegyres.org. Nick Campbell is the program's associate for the Five Gyres Institute, nonprofit focusing on reducing plastics pollution. It's a big job for a really, really big problem. Fivegyres.org is the website. Again, Nick, thank you so much for being with us. Good luck with the Trash Blitz, and thanks for keeping up the good work.
Yep. Thank you so much, Ray.
Up next, it's our mystery bird contest in just 1 minute.
The flutter of a tail feather, the flash of a wing bar in mid-flight. You don't always have a lot of time to identify a bird in nature, let alone to appreciate its beauty. But with Vortex Optics, you'll have the power to bring every wild moment closer. When you choose Vortex, you're choosing to have a partner in the field as passionate about nature as you are. Whether you're spotting old friends on the backyard feeder or packing for a once-in-a-lifetime trip to add a few species to your life list, Vortex offers a full range of optics and optics accessories for every birder and every budget. And whether the birds are taking you to another state or another country, you're always covered by the Vortex VIP warranty, an unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. If you'd like to learn more, or if you need help choosing your next optic, give Vortex a call at 1-800-4-VORTEX or visit vortexoptics.com.
Not my Uncle Ralph, but indeed our mystery bird. Here are some clues. It's a medium-sized dabbler associated with lakes and ponds. The male has a gray body and a pale gray head and dark bill, a white wing patch and a black hind end. The female is mostly brown overall, resembling a female mallard. Our bird breeds mostly in the central plains of the U.S. and Canada, and winters mainly in the central and southern U.S. and down through Mexico. That's the bird, and beautiful prizes include the fabulous Brome Bird Care Mega 600 Feeder with the extra large tube that holds nearly 2.5 pounds of seed. Easy to clean and chew proof, and includes the Brome Seed Ventilation System. It keeps the seed cool and dry, which is pretty important. And a big bag of our favorite coffee. Shade-grown, bird-friendly, and truly delicious Birds and Beans coffee grown under the natural forest canopy in Central America for preserving winter habitat for birds. Those are the prizes, and you heard the clues and sound. Now just give us a call and tell us what you think that bird is as soon as you can. The number is 781-837-4900. Once again, that's 781-837-4900. Call us as soon as you can so we'll have time for the old contest here. One more time with the number, 781-837-4900. We'll check in with Mike O'Connor. It's Let's Ask Mike Live in just 1 minute.
Hog Island Audubon Camp has welcomed nature enthusiasts to its shores since 1936. It's a program of the Seabird Institute, and the island hosts five-night sessions for adults, teens, and families taught by the world's leading naturalists, ornithologists, and artists. Hog Island campers deepen their relationships with the birds and the ecosystems around them during the island's immersive educational camps. New for the 2025 camp season is Let's Go Birding Together. Scheduled during peak fall migration, this session is a safe space for queer birders to connect with nature and each other while learning ways to foster a similar environment in their community's home. For full Hog Island schedule, program details, and to register, visit hogisland.audubon.org.
Well, we know that eggs are expensive these days, but are egg shells also expensive? That's one of the questions that Mike O'Connor may not be able to answer, but he can enlighten us about another eggshell-related topic, and I believe he's about to do so right about now. Good morning, Mike.
Did I just hear your Uncle Ralph at the studio?
Uncle Ralph, he's singing. There he is again.
There he is. Go.
All right, Ralph, go. That's enough. Okay, that was... It stops every once in a while, yeah.
Yeah, there is. The price of eggs, I guess they got so high. I see people in the neighborhood outside with baskets looking under bushes and stuff for eggs today.
Yeah, those colored. We're serving colored eggs for breakfast here. This is really this is really nice. You know, people are swapping, I understand, for Easter, swapping eggs for substituting marshmallows and the, you know, color the marshmallows.
That's not a bad idea.
Instead of the eggs, yeah.
I tried egg beaters. They didn't work.
No, that's a different... That gets kind of messy.
That was messy.
Yeah. But we're talking about egg shells particularly.
Egg shells,
yeah.
Right. Certain times of year, especially in the spring, birds need to, especially the females, need to bring up their calcium content. And in certain areas, they usually get it from... grit. They get it from the soil, from their diet. But in certain areas, especially the Northeast, where acid rain has been an issue, the soil's been depleted because of the acid rain. So birds go to alternative sources, and we've seen birds eating chips of paint or cement, or even ashes from fireplaces and barbecues and things, trying to supplement that. And so some people do, and some people who want to do a little bit of adventurous, they take their eggshells, perhaps, after Easter, and, you know, they have got some eggs, and eggs that have been taken care of properly, that have been refrigerated, even if they've been boiled and used, but they, you know, haven't been out all night. And they take the shells, and what they can do is then they recommend that if you use eggshells, you rinse them off and then put them in the oven on a cookie sheet, for about 20 minutes at 250. Sounds like I'm making a cake here, but you put it on a cookie sheet in the oven for about 20 minutes, bring them in, let them cool, then crunch them up, roll them up, and then put them outside. People can put them in a little dish or mix them in with their feed on feeders or whatever. And that that'll be a good way of getting more from your money that you spent on the eggs, and also supplementing the birds that kind of and sometimes need a increase their diet of calcium this time of year because they're all laying eggs and it's got to increase it. And it's kind of a fun family project after you've done decorating eggs and put them up for the birds as well.
Nice. Tell me, are there any birds that just lay the shell? I mean, that would be really a way to get around.
You know what?
The
you're
going
to have to ask Uncle Ralph that question.
Ask Ralph and see what. All right. Okay. Thank you, though.
Happy Easter, everybody.
Happy Easter to you, Mike, and talk to you next week.
Thanks. Yep. Bye bye.
Mike O'Connor here on Talking Birds, and we're back to the mystery bird contest. Well, you just heard the bird or Uncle Ralph again just there. A medium-sized dabbler associated with lakes and ponds. And what is that bird? Scott is in California with a possible correct answer or a guess or something like that for us. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Ray. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you. Scott, thank you. And what do you think our mystery bird is?
I'm going with Uncle Henry's gadwall.
Yeah, it's Uncle Ralph's gadwall, but that's close enough, you know? It's the gadwall. The gadwall is right, a bird sometimes known to steal food from other birds, including coots and other ducks, including diving ducks, they say, as they return to the surface. That's the thing about
sinister thing.
Thus, yeah, they're just doing what they do. But anyway, you got the right answer there, Scott. Thank you. And let's see the time here. We have time for a bonus question if you'd like to go for it.
Sounding so smart that first one.
All right.
Yes,
well,
sir. Go for it.
This one is connected to our mystery bird, which kind of makes sense. It's a bonus question for our mystery bird contest. Here it is. Although the gadwall, they tell us, is the third most hunted duck species after mallard and green-winged teal, their populations have increased over the last several decades. One secret of their success is one of these multiple choice. A, they fly in zigzag patterns, making it tough for hunters to get a bead on them. B, they have a habit of nesting on islands within marshes, which gives them some protection from predators. Or C, around their nests, they build a big wall known as a gadwall. No, that probably is not the right answer, but it's one of those anyway, for sure. What do you think, Scott? Maybe you'll go two for two here.
I'm going with B. They nest on islands.
Islands and marshes, you are absolutely right.
All right. No, thank you, Ray. You made my Easter.
Glad to hear it. Yes, that's exactly right. And there you go. So all those prizes. And that bonus prize, by the way, a feather-friendly kit to keep birds from crashing into your windows.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Stay on the line, and Jesse will take care of the rest there.
Thank you. Happy Easter to all your flock.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Scott. Scott there, and the correct answer is the gadwall on the mystery bird contest, which puts us pretty close to being out of time for this morning's show. Just a reminder about our ambassadors program that we talked about earlier. If you have a mind to help us spread the word about birds and conservation, go to that website, talkingbirds.com, click on Get Involved up at the top of the page, and sign up and join the more than 900 Talking Birds listeners who have become part of our ambassadors family. For next week, tentative plans. I mean, it is a week away after all, but we are planning to learn some scientific stuff from our own Debbie Bleacher with a visit to the Talking Birds Science Corner. Thanks to our amazing Talking Birds team, that same Debbie Bleacher, Freya McGregor, and our producing engineer, Jesse Wilkins. I'm Ray Brown. See you next week.
Ray Brown's Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Orleans, Cape Cod. Birdwatchersgeneralstore.com.
By Vortex Optics, with the VIP warranty. Their unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. Learn more at vortexoptics.com. And by Hog Island Audubon Camp. For full camp schedule, program details, and to register, visit hogisland.audubon.org.